Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from Metropolitan Community College on Noon Forum. Today's guest speakers, both members of the Omaha Indian Tribe, will be Richard Barea, a veteran of the Vietnam War, and Stacy Stabler, a veteran of the Iraq War. This program, presented in honor of Veterans Day, yesterday, November 11th, and part of the Native American Heritage Month celebration by Metropolitan Community College, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, November 1st, 2012, for broadcast at this time. Richard Barea, whose Omaha name is Shongazi, or Yellow Horse, was born in Winnebago, Nebraska, but grew up in Macy, Lincoln, and Omaha until he was taken to the St. Augustine Indian School. A traditional dancer, Mr. Barea has traveled with his troupe throughout the Midwest and as far away as Lithuania and Germany. He has appeared in more than 10 plays, including Sacred Sights, Lewis and Clark, Manifest Destiny, Ink and Elkskin, Wiping Away Tears, and An Evening at the Warbonnet, and has performed several roles in Opera Omaha's production of Verdi's La Traviata. Although Stacy Stabler, of the Omaha Nation, enlisted in the Army Guard when she was 17, she knew she wanted to enlist when she was 8, and when she was 17, she needed both of her parents' signatures. They were actually ecstatic by that because they saw a way of improving yourself and your life. "So it was really important for me to do that," Stabler said. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of Metropolitan Community College, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speakers is Barbara Velasquez, Coordinator of International and Intercultural Education at Metropolitan Community College.
Today we are delighted to have two fine individuals with us who are going to speak to us on the Native American warrior, yesterday and today. And this is in line with the theme for the national theme for Native American Heritage Month, serving with honor, pride, and devotion. Let me introduce to you Mr. Richard Barea and Stacy Stabler, who are going to talk with us today about their experiences.
Good morning. All right. My name is Richard Barea. I'm the past. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I served in 69 and 70 back in the old days. When Stacy and I talked and I kind of explained to her a little bit what I'm trying to do here, Barb had asked us. Had asked me to come bring some people out and talk about their experiences of the warriors, the veterans. And so I said, I agreed to that. We had another thing come up in Denver. So a lot of my friends have gone to Denver today. They have a one-day powwow. They're honoring the Omaha people, and a lot of my veterans are there. And it's a Thursday, so it's kind of hard to get people come out. But I told Barb that I'd do this, and I'm proud to do this. When I served back in 68 to 71, you know, it wasn't like it is now. This is one thing I want to tell you, that it was a lot different. It was more you're obligated because your family has gone. My uncles had served. My friends had served. So I, in turn, served. My brother served. So I enlisted in the Army back in 68. And I had a little problem getting in. It took me 8 months to get in, so they kept me there. And my brother, they shipped him off to Vietnam, and he cussed me out a couple times, but he forgave me. And but I finally got in there. I finally got into service, and when I did, I was kind of surprised at the lack of seeing natives there. I was the only native there for. I think I've seen two people in my 3 years of being in the Army. When I served there, I think I saw them in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. That was it. But I figured that I'd see a lot more native skins, we call them, redskins. But when I served, I went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Then I was informed by my warrant officer that I was going to be serving my country in Vietnam. He said, you have the honor and privilege of serving your country in Vietnam. I thought, oh, my God. Yeah, I knew I was going to go. Me and another kid there, yeah, we were both called in, and told that we're going to serve. So we did our basic, and our trip to Vietnam. We flew over there. It took us about 14 hours. And I remember the first time I come in country, it's an airport called Tham Sanut. And we landed at Tham Sanut Air Base at night. And I remember we were told to start running. The guy told us, hit the tarmac, and, you know, running. And when we did, he said, follow me. He had a little light. And to this day, I think that was a Navy corpsman or something. I, for some reason, that sticks in my mind. But we were on an Army base and Air Force base. But we hit the tarmac running, and he said, follow the light. And as we're running to the side of the field, he says, there was bombs going off all this time. And I remember the smell, you know, the jungle. And I remember the smell of, like, gasoline. And I always remember that. And the noise, the explosions, and the smoke, and the lights and the fires burning in the background. That was my first minute on the country, you know, in Vietnam, Republic of. We landed there, got out there running, followed the light. And he's telling us, don't stick your head out of the barracks, you get shot. You run down the road, you're going to get shot. I'll come get you in the morning. Stay in. Don't holler. Don't say anything. Just stay there. And that was my first day in Vietnam. I thought, oh, my God, what am I getting into? You know, here I am, no weapon. It's dark, and I'm scared. And I think I'm 20 years old. And I remember throwing back my bunk, my mattress, and there was a flak vest there. A flak vest is what protects you. You know, it's made to stop bullets, you know, supposedly. But I remember I was laying there, so I thought that's fortunate. So what I did was I threw it over my head, and I went to sleep. And about 4 o'clock in the morning, I heard some of the guys crying. You know, about 3 or 4 of them are crying. There's probably 20, 25 of us in that barracks. And I always, I kind of regret this. I told them to shut the F up, you know. But they were quiet after that. So, but I felt sorry after I said that. You know, years later, I thought, my God, maybe I should have said that. Maybe I, you know, traumatized somebody there. But that was my first day. And I served in a good unit. I happened to meet one of the guys I helped in Fort Bragg to graduate from basic. And he informed me I had two choices. I go to this post on Fubai, or I can go right next door to 80th Group compound. So I chose 80th Group because I knew 80th Group. And I guess them guys didn't take a bath for 2 weeks at a time, so I kind of lucked out on that one. But I did my service there in Vietnam, and a lot of different experiences, a lot of nights that we would get rocketed and mortared, and you'd feel terror. You know, you didn't know what's going on. You'd hear the explosions and people hollering and the alarm going off. So you run to the bunker, you know, and 30, 40 of us be in that bunker. I just can imagine what if a rocket hit that mortar. We'd all go. But that happened a lot around Christmas. And I pulled a lot of guard. Oh, my God. I counted. I did 36 guard mounds. I think I pulled guard 6 times out of that 36. The other time I was a thing called supernumerary. Supernumerary is the guy that's an extra, and he goes and somebody gets sick and he'll take his place. But people have been in the service, they'll recognize that, a supernumerary. But I served in Vietnam, and a lot of times I was scared. A lot of times I didn't realize what was going on, and that was the worst part. You didn't know what's happening. You'd hear the alarm, you know, and you'd run for the bunker, and mortars would go off, and you didn't know what's coming on. You know, it just scared you and terrified you at night, and you'd hear that alarm. You'd wake up, and you'd just roll over and put on your boots and your flak jacket and your helmet, grab your weapon, and, you know, run outside. And head for the bunker. And you didn't know what was going on. You didn't know if they were coming over the wire or not. I remember that. That for the longest time, I associated that with the night sweats and just terror. let the alarm going off. Anyway, I would jump for years after that. I would jump awake and look for my weapon. You know, my ex-wife, she'd tell me I'd get up and I'd start searching near the bed, looking for my weapon and trying to get my shoes on. I remember that. But I remember being so scared, so deadly scared that you were petrified and you just didn't know what to do, you know, that was happening. But, you know, and when I left Vietnam, I brought all that stuff with me. I brought all them fears with me. I started drinking, you know, and, well, actually I didn't stop. We started in Vietnam. Well, you know, beer was a quarter. So we started drinking every day. But that was to relieve boredom because there was nothing else for us. We put 16-hour days in, you know, 7 days a week. You know, and so we drank at night to, you know, get rid of our little sorrows there. But beer was only, like I said, 25 cents, and I had a refrigerator full of 36 cans. So we drank all the time. But when I come back, that didn't stop. I think I drank my share and somebody else's share of beer. But, you know, that experience, you know, thinking back, I wouldn't trade it. I was scared. A lot of things happened that wasn't right, wasn't the correct thing. But overall, I grew from that, you know, and I come back here to the States, and I thought, I'm going to get a job right away, you know, because I served, you know. After I got here, I served 11 months at Fort Riley, Kansas, as a clerk in the supply office. By then, I was a Spec 5, E5, which is equal to a sergeant, and they had asked me to stay 6 more months in Vietnam, and they were going to make me a Specialist 6, and I told them no. But I came back here and served 11 more months, and they asked me to stay in. I told them no. I wanted to get out of there. But all that time, I had been drinking, and I had a big problem with that. I think all of us did. You know, all of the guys that served with me, they all had drinking problems, every one of those guys. And it's killed a lot of my friends. A lot of them, the guys I served with, they're going on. And a lot of it is cause of drinking and, you know, smoking. I'm 64 now, and I'm lucky to be here. You know, I'm monopolizing everything here. Stacy, do you want to talk about your experiences?
Sure, I'd like to mention things as well. First of all, my name is Stacy Stabler, and I joined the military back in January of 1994. I've been in for over 18 and a half years, and I'm hoping to get my 20 someday. My experiences, I wanted to join the military since I was 8 years old, so it was always a dream for me to do something like this since I was 8. I joined when I was 17, and I was still a junior in high school, and I went to boot camp and came back and finished my senior year and graduated high school and finished the second part, the AIT part. And through the experiences, I felt that I was ahead of my peers because I already joined the military, graduated high school, and soon after that went off to college. My experiences are definitely what Richard had said. It's something that I would never trade for anything in the world. It takes a soldier to know the experiences and cherish those experiences, and only another soldier can understand what you went through, the sort of things that you've gone through and that you will experience for life. It's something that I am glad that I did. Being a female vet is not usually something that your male counterparts see you as, but nonetheless, you go through the same training as the males do. When I was 17, I went through boot camp, like I said, in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and that was my first time away from home, so of course it was hard. I'm born and raised in South Texas, so it was difficult for me to leave home. It's hard. The training is very difficult. Being away from home, you're very homesick, and you miss your family, your friends. But on the other hand, it's something that you got to do. You either finish your training or you get discharged. And that was something that I didn't want to do. I had to finish my training. Otherwise, my brothers may say something and maybe tease me for life, but it was something that I always wanted to do. So when I did actually graduate from boot camp, it was a great accomplishment for me because it was something that I wanted since I was 8 years old. So I, in essence, I did fulfill my dream at that point. So after that, I went off to college to University of Nebraska here in Lincoln and utilized the Montgomery GI Bill, which really helped me out financially because I just had a high school education and that's it. I didn't have anything else, no experiences besides boot camp. So it did help out going to school. With that, the GI Bill, I was able to get my bachelor's degree and continue on to my current situation, which I am in right now. I'm in graduate school, getting my master's degree equivalent to an MBA. So I think the military definitely helped me out with time management, selfless service, just everyday life. It made me a more dedicated person, an individual, to continue to where I'm at right now. And it's something, the word veteran is something that you have to earn it. You can't just be, say, wake up one morning and say, I'm a veteran today. No, it's hard, difficult training that you have to go through. And it's pride for life. And now the Veterans Day is going to be here in approximately 10 days. They're having all the commercials and all the advertisement. It just kind of makes you proud because there's a lot of people that are saying thank you, where years ago we didn't have that. So it's just kind of nice that they really reflect on the vets now, young, both young and old, and future generations that will become vets someday. So I definitely appreciate that. Another thing I wanted to mention, back in 2005, August 2005, is when Hurricane Katrina hit. And I just gave birth to my first son, who is now 7, in March of 2005. The first 6 months, my unit can't touch you, so to speak, because your infant is not 6 months old. Well, when Hurricane Katrina happened and I got deployed down to New Orleans, it was November of 2005, and my whole unit was surprised that I showed up when they said, pack up your gear, you're going to New Orleans for 36 days. And my baby just turned 7 months, so it was difficult because being a first-time mom, going to New Orleans and being there without my son, who just 7, it was very difficult. I missed his first Thanksgiving, and I didn't feed him. And just being away from him for that long really hurt. But the whole devastation and the reason why we were there is something that I would definitely cherish for a lifetime because we thought we have it bad here, but these people had nothing. All the destruction of the city, the housing, they were just not even there. There were crosses that they wrote on the houses. That there was difficult to see because I saw kids' toys, all of those out there, and I immediately thought of my son. But the whole mission for us being there was something that was important for not only the state of New Orleans, or the city of New Orleans, rather, but also just helping out whenever we can. So that experience right there is something that I will take back. And every time I see New Orleans, I have ill feelings sometimes because I was away from my son. But I made a promise to him that someday I will take him back. And I did. 2 years after that, I took him back to New Orleans. And it kind of went full circle because I left him and I went to another city to give them aid. But then I made the promise to him that I'd take him back. And I did. So now I guess I can have, the ill feelings will go away, and I really won't think about the experience of that anymore. But being a lady vet is something, not unusual, but it's very uncommon. And like Richard had mentioned earlier, when you go to boot camp or when you go to any Army facility anywhere in the world, you rarely see any Native vets. It's just you and a whole lot of other different races, different people. And it's kind of nice when you actually do run into one, because you ask them, and most of the time they're from a different tribe, a different part of the United States, but you still instantly have that connection because you are a Native. But the lack of Native vets, I know they're out there, and I know future generations will continue and go that route as well, but you just rarely don't see anybody that looks like you. So when you do see them, I mean, you're kind of bonded in a way instantly. It's just a great feeling to see somebody that looks like you. So, Rich, I don't know if you have any more, anything else to comment on?
Oh, yeah, I like to talk. Great deal. Ask Barb, she'll tell you. Yeah, Stacy and I are were members of the Warrior Society of Omaha, Nebraska, and had a great deal of pride in that. They're having a little difficulty now, and they have an offshoot, and I think we're both going to join that, I think. When I was thinking about when she was talking, you know, I came back, and there wasn't a pride when I came back, in 70 and 71. What you have now, people throw you parades. When I was back there, they didn't throw us a parade. You know, they spit on us. You know, I had a short haircut, and I remember there was a guy in a bar. I stopped at a bar, and he bought me a beer. And I think that's the only thing that I've gotten other than my tribe. My tribe honored me. They had a dance, and, you know, they give us veterans special things. I remember one time they gave us cupcakes with a little emblem on there, you know, a little it was the Shamrocks were, you know, St. Patrick's Day and stuff. So, you know, that I always remember that. But now they accept you're a vet, and they welcome you with open arms. But back then, the arms weren't open to us. You know, they shunned us, you know, called us baby killers. You know, and I didn't understand that. I went and did what I was supposed to do. And I come back, and there's that resentment against me, you know, because I served. I didn't wear my uniform for years after that. Of course, I outgrew it after a while. But during the time, I couldn't tell people I was a vet. I just was quiet about that. Then my Native pride come into, bloom. We were not a member of AIM, but we agreed with AIM. And during that time, there was an upheaval, a more pride in being a Redskin, being a Native. And I remember that. And from that, we started going to powwows, my wife and I. And by that time, I had 2 or 3 children. And we started having them dance. My twins started dancing. Mike and Gabe, they were grass dancers. And they started winning. And we started going to more and more powwows, getting more and more involved. And I think my culture saved me from drinking myself to death. Because I drank every weekend. You know, I played ball. 4 times a week, and I drank 4 times a week. It was an excuse. But I think when my Indianness, if you can say that, came into play, I started thinking, what am I doing is wrong, and I've got to stop this. And it took me a while. And if I keep on going back to my drinking problem, it was a problem. It was going to kill me. So I have to tell them that. And it was there before I went to Vietnam, but Vietnam made it more. Like a magnifying glass. It just seemed like it magnified everything and made everything worse. And when I come back to look for a job here in Omaha, my brother and I remember we went to Wilson's Concrete, and we were qualified. We had a driver's license, everything you can imagine, and they wouldn't hire us. I can always remember that. And I guess because we were Indian, but I thought being a vet would kind of open some doors for me. But not that one. I finally had to try the city, and they gave me 6 extra points for being a veteran. And so I started working with the city in 1975, and I put 26 years in. And during that time, you know, I continued to go into powwows. And Native American Church, I looked into that. I went to meetings. And now, at my age, I can say that my being a Native, you know, I there's so much pride there. But back in the day, there wasn't that pride there. You had to search for it. And I think each individual has to do that. But when I was younger, When I first grew up, you know, John Wayne was the main guy. He shot all the Indians, you know. But now that's changed. But I you know, I don't want to monopolize. Is there anything you want to say, Stacy?
Sure. Well, now, since Richard mentioned Powell's, I now take pride when I wear my uniform and when they ask me to help raise the flag or to assist in any way I can. It's kind of a right, if you will, or it's a sense of duty to help out whenever you can, even though you may not know the person who's deceased or whatever. But I know, in a way, I'm doing all this stuff is for my children. Obviously, at 17 years old, I didn't have any kids, and I knew that I would someday. But I take it's a sense of pride for me because my children see me wearing that uniform, and they tell their other little friends or family members, whoever walks by, my mommy's in the Army. And I no way I kind of chuckle because, you know, I joined when I was 17, and this is something that I didn't even think that they would even say or do. But it's also something that I want them to see someday if they choose or they choose not to join. It's something that I took advantage of and joined. But if they were to join someday, I mean, it's totally up to them. But even them helping out and, you know, wearing that uniform is a sense of pride. And not everybody can put it on and actually wear it with the sense of pride that any soldier does. So I do enjoy it, and I do enjoy my children seeing the choice that I made at such a young age and hopefully, again, retire from it and something that they can look forward to someday.
Oh, okay. You brought about the flag carriers and everything. Every time I go to Denver March Powwow, there's a arena director there who hits me up. I've got to help out different organizations that are one man short. Fort Duchesne, I've helped out Utah, you know, and I've helped out the Santees, all the tribes. I seem like I've helped out, and it's an honor. But when you go there, it's about a 45-minute long grand entry, and you've got to stand there, you know. And the guy hits me up all the time. Like I said, not the MC, but the arena director. Chico Her Many Horses, that's his name. And as soon as I see him, I run because I know he's going to put me out in the arena. But it's an honor. And I wanted to bring that up to Stacy. Stacy always shows us the correct way to fold a flag, and she knows the drill and ceremony. She's a lot better than I am. And, of course, she's a new vet. But this is, I think, the third organization I've joined up. And we started one here many years ago. For the lack of people, we went under. Now there's another one now, and probably the third one coming up. But if anybody asks me, I have a great deal of pride. I'll stand up. I'll march in a parade. You want a little bit more there, Stace? Okay. I'm going to talk about a little, you know, when I got out. And I try to, you know, when you get out of a service like that, you're just trying to change the world. You want everything to be this way and that way. You know, I used to get up at 6:30 in the morning and set my bed and, you know, get it ready, and then everybody else is still asleep. You try to change the world, but you can't. You can only change yourself. I didn't find that out for a couple of years, you know. But the military service, they tell you to do something, you do something. And telling my kids and my brother or my sister or something like that, it just doesn't work. You know, they work on Indian time, and Indian time is about an hour later, you know. They take a great deal of time to do anything. But when I come out, I was really gung-ho. I was going to get a job and, you know, change the world, get me a new Cadillac and everything else. But it took time to get me a new car. But I worked 26 years for the city and played softball. I love softball. I played four nights a week. And I thought, this is the life, you know. I realize that I just a guy making it through life. But I've got to thank my service for straightening my head out, because I didn't have it together until I got in the service. I wanted to do what I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it. But the Army has structure, you know. You've got to follow the rules. So that straightened me out. And I don't think if I had hadn't gone to the service, I don't think I'd be here now. I think I'd be long gone. I think I'd be, you know, pushing up daisies. I think I would have drank myself to death.
He mentioned about Army discipline. That's something that I think I will have to the day I die, with the dedication, the time management, even coming down to the way you walk. I know myself, because I'm not rather 6 foot tall or whatever, I find myself walking faster to keep up with everybody else. And it's something that I do even now, even today, I'll be walking faster because I got that march in me. And also, in terms of the exercising, this summer, I was exercising, I was running 6 to 10 miles a week. And it's something that you think about, oh, I'm falling out of shape, I need to get back into shape. So I would wake up 5:30, 6 in the morning and go do my couple miles that morning. And it's something that it shapes you to think even now. And I think that within that Army discipline, that's something I'm going to have till the day I die, just because it was instilled in us and every day, and it was important for us to be healthy rather, and to have the strenuous exercise and the mindfulness and the peacefulness that you go throughout your day. And I guess it really does help me, because now I can, you know, have my time management and structure my day and have a sense of, you know, a feeling of accomplishment at the end of the day, because I did finish all of those things that I'd started out earlier that morning.
I don't run 2 miles, but I try to do I dance traditional, and when I do, I generally start a couple of weeks before and dance, trying to dance every day. I dance, I put the music on and just set myself up, and that's got to go back to the Army. Everything I've, you know, physically done, you know, I do. I exercise and I walk 3 times a week at Westroads, you know, and I lift weights, a little weights. That goes back to the service again, you know, being in shape and doing things and preparing. When I prepare for, say, this talk, I'm prepared an hour ahead of time. I'm here. So that's the Army thing. Yeah, get in there again. And this morning I had to decorate the window for OPS. They have a window there. They had old Indian artifacts in there, but they didn't look very well. So I put my stuff in there, and it looks a lot better. But, you know, thanks to my training, I am aware, and I get it prepared a long time before. So it's got me this far. So I think it's going to probably do it all more, you know, the rest of my life, like you said.
Well, since Veterans Day is really approaching here fairly soon, I'd like to thank all the businesses and all the Pride Without the City. I guess really not only here in the city of Omaha, but just throughout the nation. It seems now that a lot of them are finally realizing that the vets really do put a lot, you know, take out of their lives and go fight for the country. So it's kind of relieving that a lot of them are, just a simple thank you goes a long way. And as a vet, for them to be saying that, it really truly does mean a lot. So I'd like to thank all the businesses and that are helping us out and finally acknowledging us.
Yeah, Stacy, you know, as you get older, you get more appreciative, you know. And I get to the point that I get misty, you know, about when I think about my grandchildren. I've got 55 grandchildren, so I get misty quite a bit. But as I've grown older, I begin to appreciate some of the older things, you know, that appeal to me. You know, the flag, the ceremony, you know, the regalia. I dance, and when I do dance, I try to honor the people I've gone on. My brother, my wife, my son. My grandparents, I honor them by dancing. I was selfish in the beginning. I just danced with it because it was fun. And I look good in my outfit, I thought, you know. So, but you know, as I've grown older, I realize that we owe, you know, me and you, Stacy, we owe a great debt of gratitude for all the people that have come before us and get us to this point, our people, our relatives. And I want to thank them. Oh, thank you very much.
I wanted to thank both of you. Your ability to share with us your experiences and talk about the changes it made in your life are very notable. I appreciate that. I did have one question for Stacy. I'm so thankful that we have a female veteran or military, active duty military person with us. Can you describe any kinds of discrimination you felt you may have received as a female, or do you feel that that's not the case?
Well, no, actually, yeah, I can elaborate a little bit about that. I joined January of 1994, and I went to boot camp June of that year, 1994. And being a female vet, we did receive discrimination, not only because I'm Native, but as a whole. A lot of them did not want us to be there because they thought, you know, our role should have been the traditional role, the kitchen, barefoot pregnant, what have you, secretarial type, you know, positions. But we showed that, yes, we're female and we're different from our male counterparts, but we can definitely do the same thing you can. We all have to do the, you know, time 2 mile run, the X amount of sit-ups, the X amount of push-ups. But since we are female, we have to do less. And a lot of them at the beginning saw that we were there and they kind of wished that we weren't there. However, we did continue and we went through the same training as they did. So towards the end, it's like, if you will, they kind of like reached their hands out towards us and said, you know what, come with us. You know, you're part of us now because you're not the quote unquote average female because of the training is very rigorous and very, very difficult, very tremendous. So yes, in the beginning we did receive some of that, but towards the end they kind of saw us as, you did it. You know, we can't really say anything about you.
Thank you. And I wanted to ask also, are there any barriers that you would like to see removed for females in the military in the future?
That's a good question. Just because my time is coming towards the end here, I would say to the future generations, the next, what have you, to just bear with it, any discrimination that you may receive. Know that, yes, it's a very difficult choice that you make, but also realize that someday you can hopefully make a change in the world and just be there. And even though they may look at you and say, you know, take that uniform off or get away from there, and you're not equivalent to the, you know, to the males, but just really know that it's a self-accomplishment and that you can do it no matter what they say towards you. So I just wish the rest of the females, really, and the male personnel that do join, I wish them all the luck, and I just hope that it does change so that they can allow women to join.
Thank you. And a question for both of you. One of the reasons I was so interested in having people talk on this topic is that it had been shared with me several years back by a Native colleague that he really didn't have a choice about becoming a part of military. It was in his blood and he needed to do that. And that simple comment really led me to believe that a lot of people in mainstream society just do not understand what it means to be military, how important patriotism is for Native peoples. Do you have anything you'd like to share to comment on that?
Yeah, Barb, you're talking about that. You know, like it's in your DNA. You have to serve, you know. On my part, my uncles were in there. My brother joined, you know, and I had, you know, if I didn't go, I would have people criticizing me to this day, you know, and that'd be my family members. Why didn't you go? You know, you're chicken, you know, you're scared, you know what I mean? When you're a kid, you know, and I started out like I was 19 or 18 when I started out to join. But it was in my DNA. I had to go in. All my people had served. My uncle, one of them got killed over in Anzio. You know, he got killed over there. So my aunts, I've always been aware of that. He served. My uncle served. He was a lieutenant colonel when he retired. And so, you know, I dealt with him all the time. And I just, it wasn't a choice. It was go, and that was it. There wasn't a second part of it. You just went. It's your obligation to go. And I'm glad I did.
Well, definitely, I would say that it's, you know, in my DNA as well. Like I said, I was 8 years old when I wanted to join. And my father's side, it's predominantly military. And my uncle was in Vietnam, and he got shot, and he still has the bullet in his stomach even now. And my great uncle, he was in World War II. He was a gunner in the Navy. So it's something like that that I looked upon as a child and wanted to do someday. And I guess more for my brothers, because there's four of us, actually. I have an older brother, Daniel Jr., who's in the Army, 82nd Airborne, myself. I have another brother, who Jason, who joined the Army a year after me. And then I have another brother, Eric, who joined the Army the year after my brother. So for them, I think it was kind of like a sense of duty that they had to do it, because my older brother did it, I did it. A year later, my other brother did, and so forth. So within that, it was something that we all just finished high school and joined immediately. So it was something within us and within our family. They knew every summer one of us would be gone. And sometimes there were two or three of us gone each summer. So we never really planned anything. But it's something that we all look back, and I can say, hey, there's seven of us, seven children in my family, and I'm the only girl. But there's four out of us seven that joined. And my mother and my father, they both said after the fourth child, the middle child, joined and finished his time, my mother and my father said, the government has enough of my children and did not want the last three, my three baby brothers, to join. But in a way, they support us because they know exactly what it's like. They've seen us leave. They've seen us grab our gear. They've seen the recruiters come. They've seen all of that. So my three younger brothers that did not join know exactly what it's like to be a vet, even though they are not. Just because they've seen all of us go through the whole hassle of joining and being part of the military.
Thank you. I appreciate the service that you've given, and your conversations have been tremendous, so I appreciate that. If you have anything you'd like to say in closing, that's fine, or we can just say...
Thank you for your time, and actually thank you for asking me to be here today. I also like to thank... people that are listening and people that wish they could have been here. Thank you for listening to my story.
Yeah, I want to bring that up too. It's an honor to talk about serving, and Stacy, I have a great deal of admiration for her. We've been to powwows and parades and everything, and she's a trooper. She comes through. So, and I asked her to help me out on this, and she volunteered. So, you know, I'm proud to sit beside her here, and I want to thank everybody for listening. You know, this is a heartfelt experience coming out. This is coming from the heart. This is, you know, it's not from really thinking about this. It's just blurting it out, and, you know, and that's the better way to do things. So I want to thank you. I want to thank the audience. Thank you, Barb. Thank you very much. Ahu.
You've been listening to a lecture program from Metropolitan Community College on Noon Forum. Today's guest speakers, both members of the Omaha Indian Tribe, were Richard Berea, a veteran of the Vietnam War, and Stacy Stabler, a veteran of the Iraq War. This program, presented in honor of Veterans Day, yesterday, November 11th, and part of the Native American Heritage Month celebration by Metropolitan Community College, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, November 1st, 2012, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Barbara Velasquez, Coordinator of International and Intercultural Education at Metropolitan Community College, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 200 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.